Did we admit document D-25?
Right, and Ms. Weldon was just starting to discuss the final environmental impact statement.
That's D-25.
Okay. Now D-26.
Right, not.
Correct.
Okay, so Ms. Weldon, maybe you can pick up again explaining what the proposal is as described on the fact sheet of that document.
I will do that. The proposal addressed in this final environmental impact statement is to implement mandatory housing affordability, MHA, requirements for multifamily residential and commercial development in certain areas of Seattle. That's the proposal, EIS, and I believe that this proposal, the MHA, is what Mr. Shook made some reference to in his testimony or testimony last Friday. And now on page 3.92 of Exhibit D-25. This is the mitigation measures 3.1.3. And the opening sentence says, under all alternatives, including alternative one, no action, housing affordability and displacement would continue to be significant concerns. Then goes on to describe additional strategies for providing affordable housing and preventing displacement beyond the proposed MHA program. And some of those strategies are among the strategies that Mr. Shook mentioned in his testimony. And those include direct funding of affordable housing, the multifamily tax exemption, incentive zoning, tenant protections, and tenant relocation assistance. And then on the last page, which is 3.98, we have the title Significant Unavoidable Adverse Impacts. And the first paragraph there starts, implementing MHA cannot meet the entire need for affordable housing. Seattle will continue to face housing affordability challenges. The Seattle 2035 Comprehensive Plan, EIS, found a significant unavoidable adverse impact in the area of housing, stating that Seattle would continue to face a housing affordability challenge under all alternatives studied. Okay, and towards the end of that same paragraph, just for the last sentence, it says, housing costs will continue to be a burden for a segment of the Seattle's population due to high demand and competition for housing generated by a strong job market and attractive natural and cultural amenities. Therefore, even with the implementation of MHA in the study area, Seattle will continue to face a significant challenge in the area of housing affordability. So that document made reference to Seattle 2035, which is the city's comprehensive plan, for the, and Exhibit D-26 are excerpts from the final EIS for the comprehensive plan. And so Exhibit D-26 contains the cover page, the fact sheet, which is four pages, the table of contents, it's only one page, section 3.1, which is the introduction to section 3.1 on additional analysis, and pages 3.1-7 through 3.1-20 from that section.
And we would like to have this admitted.
Objections?
No objection.
Admitted.
Okay. Okay. So the main reason that we're looking at this section from the FEIS is because it says, go see the draft EIS, which will be Exhibit D27. So turning in D26, please look at page 3.1-1, which says additional analysis. And towards the end of the first paragraph, it says, this section of the final EIS should be read in the context of the draft EIS because the affected environment section is not repeated. So sending it back to the draft EIS. Also, on, next on page 3.1-17, at the beginning of population, the section population, employment, and housing, that section discusses growth and employment. And on 3.1-20, it largely refers to the draft EIS. Okay, and under mitigation measures.
I'm sorry, this is under, this is page 3.1-20?
Yes. Yes. That's mitigation measures, 3.1.20. Did I skip ahead?
No, that's fine.
Okay. So under mitigation measures, second sentence says, applicable mitigation measures for the preferred alternatives are the same as analyzed in the draft EIS. See where I'm going with this? And then also under significant unavoidable adverse impacts. Under the preferred alternative, conclusions for significant unavoidable adverse impacts regarding housing affordability would remain the same as concluded in the draft EIS.
So perhaps we should go to the draft EIS.
Yes, okay, let's do that.
Like a building to a document.
Okay. So now we're going to go to proposed Exhibit D27, which is excerpts from the draft EIS for Seattle 2035. The excerpts in that exhibit include the cover page, first three pages of the fact sheet, the contents, page 3.6-1, and this is the introduction to section 3.6 on population, employment, and housing. And it includes then pages 3.6-32 through 3.6-34 of that section.
And we would like to admit this as well.
No objection.
All right, that's admitted. D27.
Okay, so now turning to page 3.6-32, there's a discussion of mitigation strategies, and those strategies are similar to, but actually in some ways broader than what we saw in the MHA analysis, which was Exhibit D25. So, you go to the last page under significant unavoidable adverse impacts of D27. It concludes that Seattle will face housing affordability challenges due to increasing demand, both as a result of growth in the number of households and in the economic profile of households, which are becoming more economically stratified. Seattle's fixed land supply and the premium in terms of housing cost and commercial space that are placed on higher density development close to transit and other amenities would likely exacerbate this issue in those locations. Rental costs can be expected to be highest in urban centers and some hub urban villages, especially downtown, First Capitol Hill, South Lake Union, Ballard, Fremont, and West Seattle Junction, and to rise the most in neighborhoods where existing rents are relatively low. Okay, and finally, the comprehensive plan, which I go to the website and you will find. We have policy H5.19, which says, consider requiring provisions for housing, including rent/income restricted housing, as part of major institution master plans and development agreements when such plans would lead to housing demolition or employment growth. So, contrary to Mr. Shook's testimony, what these documents we've provided today suggest to SDCI is why we felt comfortable recommending an affordable housing condition. It's that the city faces affordable housing problems as the city grows, even assuming job growth at the University of Washington. City policymakers are considering and implementing a number of measures to mitigate those problems. They admit those measures do not fully mitigate or solve our affordable housing problems, and they will continue to take other opportunities to mitigate impact on affordable housing where appropriate. SDCI thinks an appropriate opportunity to do that is for the Council to follow the Comprehensive Plan's Major Institution Master Plan Housing Policy to add an affordable housing condition to the university's CMP. So as a result of that sort of analysis, that conclusion, our recommendation is included as conditions number 1 and 2, which is an amendment on page 276 of the housing section of the master plan to include the statement, the university shall construct 150 affordable housing units for faculty and staff earning less than 60% AMI. And second, a condition of the master plan shall state construction of 150 affordable housing units for faculty and staff earning less than 60% AMI shall be constructed within the MIO boundary, primary impact zone, or secondary impact zone prior to the development of 6 million net gross square feet or the life of the master plan, whichever occurs first. Keep going now, right?
The floor is yours.
Okay. All right, so now I'm going to move on to open space.
Actually, though, if I may.
Yes.
There was an exhibit that is from the department that was a press release. I'd like you to speak.
Oh, okay.
If you could, please.
I know that's been referenced by Ms. Clark, I believe. And so, exhibit number. I don't know.
It is D14.
Okay.
If you could just explain how you believe this relates to conditions 1 and 2.
Well, this press release came out before our recommendation was completed, and so we based our recommendation on this proposal and basically said, well, let's make it a commitment rather than just a press release. And we felt that we had the authority, as I've described, in the policy, because of the employment growth that's associated with the university's plan. And so the 150 units is described as being a conservative proposal by Ms. Clark. And so SDCI is going to join them in helping them make that a commitment.
Thank you. Thank you.
The next subject area I wanted to describe and discuss is the open space that's proposed as part of the plan. And I think we all agree that the open space that's proposed is an important component of the plan, and it was described by Professor Way this morning in terms of its benefit. We also see that it's directly related to the proposed height increases, much of which will occur in the south and west campus areas, as where most of the development will also occur. And so because of the importance of this open space, the city is particularly focused on the commitment and the timing of the implementation, the design, the implementation, and construction of that open space. And so we have we make reference to the open space under the policy discussion and under the rezone discussion as well. One of the things that I put together was a table, because the commitments in the plan were kind of spread in different sections, and I wanted to be able to see it just in the table format. And I did that for myself, and I thought, well, maybe the hearing examiner might find that useful, and perhaps others as well.
This is Exhibit D-15. That's a question for you.
I'll look and see. It is.
I will note that this was among the ones that the university had not yet consented to being admitted. Why don't we hear a bit more from Ms. Waldman before I ask Heather?
Okay, so what I did is the plan describes open space in sort of two phases. There's the design and implementation, and then there's the construction. And then it also describes it in terms of where is that open space located. Is it in the West Campus Green? Is it in the South Campus? Is it the Waterfront Trail, which goes through west, south, and east? And what is the timing of all of those things as to when design and implementation will be done and when construction will be done? So in Exhibit D-15, I separated it out into campus sectors. You'll see the green highlighted areas. And then on the left column is the design and implementation plan, and on the right column is construction of open space. And in sort of the white boxes is language that I took from the plan. And in the orange boxes are the recommended changes to the timing in terms of our recommendation for the master plan. So that's just to be able to compare what the university proposed and what the city is recommending. So that's what this is intended to be.
Okay, will you, let me ask now. We'd like to admit this as an exhibit.
All right. Exhibit D-15 is admitted.
Okay. So I'm just going to kind of walk through it as shown here, first starting with the design and implementation of the West Campus Green. And pages 98 and 240 of the plan say that design and implementation will be done with the completion of 1.5 million square feet of net new development in the West Campus. And SDCI is recommending that it be done at the earlier of either the 1.5 million square feet or the time that the university submits its first permit application for development sites W27, W29, W33, W34, or W35. Now, those are sites that are, for the most part, adjacent to the West Campus Green. It's shown in the plan. Okay, and then as far as construction of that same open space, the university's plan says that the construction would occur with completion of 3 million net new square feet in the West Campus. And the city is recommending that the construction of the West Campus Green and West Campus section of the Waterfront Trail be completed by the earlier of the 3 million square feet of development in the West Campus sector at completion of adjacent development sites W29, W33, and W34, or the exhaustion of the 6 million square feet square foot growth allowance. And so we're trying to make sure that it does happen, that the plan doesn't expire before it's going to be constructed, that you don't get 2.9 million square feet in the West Campus sector and finish the 6 million, or, you know, it's just we're trying to sort of cover all the bases, really, in terms of the things that could happen in terms of development within the West sector and or development throughout the campus. So we also, I think, tried to clarify in terms of there's some other open spaces, which is the plaza and the Belvedere, which are adjacent to sites W29 and W27, respectively. And so that's also the same sort of thing where we're trying to get the timing of the construction of those open spaces when those sites are developed. Those are adjacent to those two sites. So that's that. Okay, then there's the Waterfront Trail. Now, the master plan says that the concept plan for all sections of the trail will be done with the completion of 1.5 million square feet of development in the West Campus. So all sections being the west, south, and east sections of the Waterfront Trail. So we're going to plan the whole thing when 1.5 million square feet of development is done in the West Campus. So, again, we're trying to tie it down a little bit, and so our recommendation is that design and implementation be done, whichever is earlier, either the 1.5 million square feet or the time the university submits its first permit application for development of sites W27, W29, W33, W34, or W35, which are in the adjacent to the trail. In the West Campus. And then, I guess I'm wondering whether, is it helpful for you to go through all this, or can I just read and let you go through this? I don't need to if it's not necessary, I guess.
I've read your report.
Yeah.
And
I know.
Somewhat duplicative.
I know. So it's I'm offering this just to be able to provide you comparing on your table one to the other. And I agree that I don't want to read it.
Is there anything on here that you think might need some further explanation, such as anything that's highlighted or anything that you think is not evident?
I don't think there is. I have one area highlighted on the second page, which is about the construction of the Waterfront Trail in the South Campus sector. And I believe we received an email from Ms. Doherty about that to Lindsay King about when that would be completed. And so that's why it's highlighted, I guess, would be for the university to confirm that timing would be with completion of those sites. So that's why that's highlighted. That was an email to a fellow planner who I don't have access to her email. So.
Anything else you think is not self-explanatory?
No. I'd like to think not.
Would this be a good time for the afternoon break?
We could do that.
Let's do that.
All right. Let's break for 15 minutes.